Coming up on today's episode, Tesla releases some secret Q2 delivery numbers, Boring Company has a contract in Las Vegas, and the Starship gets ready to hop. Let's get ludicrous. Hi, and welcome to Our Ludicrous Future. This is the podcast where we talk about all the cool future tech stuff that's happening today that makes your future totally cool and ludicrous. My name is Joe Scott from the Answers with Joe YouTube channel. With me is Tim Dodd.
Hi, it is me, Tim Dodd, the everyday astronaut from places. That's all. And then also we have Ben Solens, who is hiding? He's on an elevator.
What's up, guys? It's Ben Solens from Teslanomics. How are we doing, fellas?
Well, I was doing great until Joe botched the intro and said Starship is going to fly. What?
I knew there'd be a bunch of offended people and you would be the first one.
I've never been more offended. I think I'm probably just going to leave.
But there has to be something named Starship or something, right? That's a real thing. Like, what about what he said was wrong? Because I don't get it. Because there's star everything
hopper.
Now, right? Like star coffee cup is like the new WeWork thing or whatever, right?
Yes. But Star Hopper is getting ready to hop, not
is
Starship
it?
Yet.
And the Starship is going to ship.
Starship's going to ship.
Yeah.
It's pants.
What about like Star Mousepad or something? Is that still going?
Yes. SpaceX is a long awaited Star Mousepad.
It's like the new launch pad design from Disney. And copyright claim. There you go.
Yeah. And we're sued.
Yeah. And that's it. So is it going to hop? What's going on with it?
Oh, we're talking about that. I thought we were going to start off with some Tesla news for once, because we always start off with
SpaceX
news.
That's true. We had talked about that beforehand.
Come on, Ben.
Tim has to sit in the corner for a while.
I'm so high right now. I can't really focus, guys. I apologize.
What?
Being in California thing. I don't know.
Yeah. It's just in the air now.
This morning? Was it this morning? What's today? Is it today? Yeah. This morning, there was actually a leak. Speaking of Starhopper, I don't know, but an email that Elon Musk had sent to his fellow employees saying that they may be on track to beat Q4 of 2018's delivery numbers for Tesla. So this is a big deal because Q4 was their biggest, best in history. They delivered 90,700 Teslas, which is like an absolute monster. Like they were, you know, just a couple years ago, they weren't even delivering that many in a year. So Q4 was massive, and this email says that they're on track. They're making about 900 Model 3s a day, 6,300 or so per week, and that in the quarter, in Q2 that we're in right now, is it Q2? God, I don't even know what month it is. In this quarter, they have 50,000 net new orders. So these are new orders that were not previous reservations that are being converted. You may think, hey, where did all those are they still there? Yeah, there's still the UK, Australia. There's tons of countries that don't even have the Model 3 yet. So there are still a backlog of reservations floating out there. This 50,000 net new orders, to me, points to what I've believed for a long time, that demand is still very strong, and that with things like the Model 3 leasing and all that, with the price coming down, it's just kind of proliferating more and more. So there's been no confirmation, unless it's happened in the last hour or so, that this was a real email, but a lot of the other stuff in the email about the email seems to point that it was authentic, and you can see that kind of on the screen here. So good news for Tesla, amidst a seeming, not that it's anything new, but kind of an unending amount of negative press from some of the fudsters out there.
That was the thing. Was I was going to interrupt you and say that this can't be right, because CNBC has been saying that they're falling apart and that they have no demand and that they haven't sold a single car in like 2 years. And
that's right. Yeah.
Well, yeah. I mean, clearly, Elon said this at the end of the first quarter or beginning of the second quarter after the results, saying, like, listen, we just started delivering to Europe, like, basically a week ago, essentially, like, most of our deliveries were in the past week. And, like, you're still seeing a bunch of people taking delivery in Europe. And, yeah, now they're ramping up all the other stuff. Like, of course they're going to have a big quarter. Like, I don't get it.
Well,
I don't
wasn't part of the reason why Q1 was a little lackluster was because a lot of the cars were kind of like on their way to Europe and they hadn't been taken delivery yet, so they were
correct.
Kind of like in some limbo.
They don't actually count them on the accounting books until it's in the person's hand, until they have actual ownership paperwork signed, which we've all seen is not their strong suit. So, you know, there's definitely some challenges there. Plus, you know, to Elon's point, you know, the ocean is a big and powerful thing, and you can't exactly control it. Like a ship may be a day or two late, and if that day or two happens to be right at the end of a quarter, it can dramatically swing the numbers, like we've seen with Norway in the past, where I think it was CNBC. It was like, oh, Norway sales are tanking for Tesla. It's terrible. It's like they only get one shipment a quarter, and so it had been 2 months since the last shipment. It's kind of a, you know, I mean, that's not even like clickbait. That's like fraud at that point. It's one of those things. So I think it makes a lot of sense, you know, that we're going to – I mean, I don't know. If you look at the real what's happening with the company, things are pointed in the right direction.
I mean, it's been a frustrating week because there's just been an onslaught, it seems like, of bad news and FUD and everything. And then I have to give you a little kudos, Tim – or I'm sorry, Ben, for just a second because not Tim. No,
Tim doesn't get
– Tim doesn't even make videos anymore.
More on that later. In the video you did yesterday where you were talking about, there was a graph that you showed that was like the Tesla Q1 Model 3 sales were higher than all of their competitors in that same luxury market for all of last year.
Yeah,
correct.
And the Q1 was like the bad quarter for Tesla.
Right. Yeah.
And you just keep seeing these things saying like, oh, there's no demand, they can't sell them and everything. And I'm looking at my app over here with the referrals that I've made and stuff. And there's like 12 people who have ordered and they're waiting on their car. And
that's,
it's like,
crazy.
What do you mean there's no demand? I've got 12 people right here that are just waiting to get their car.
Yeah. And it's insane to me that the stock is a low for 3 years now or something. I mean, it's. What is going? Look at Gigafactory in China is flying off the shelves, getting ready to crank out cars to China. I mean, how can you? Why are people thinking they're not doing well? Like, by all metrics, they're killing it.
It is largely, I feel, driven by the speculators and in the media. But you know, the thing we say in economics is the market does not reflect reality. So what's happening in the real world doesn't necessarily bear any resemblance to what's happening in the stock market. I have a very cynical view of the stock market. It's basically, to me, a tool invented by rich people to separate poor people from their money. So, you know, that's like I'm totally like against that kind of thing. But there's countless examples throughout history of where like what's happening in the stock market has no resemblance of what's happening. Like, let's say a company has a massive layoff. Like, general population will think, oh, man, that sucks. That company is bad. Generally, that makes the stock go up because the people that all they care about is profit, they don't care about actual humans, are like, you know, yeah, screw the people. Let's make the money. And so that's just like a typical example of like how the market doesn't reflect reality, you know. So I think that's what you're seeing. Now, Adam Jonas from Morgan Stanley had kind of this call, I haven't listened to it yet, that apparently was really kind of damning to Tesla.
Yeah.
Or at least they took out snippets and then made headlines out of them. Kind of like the Consumer Reports thing. This isn't even on our list to talk about, but Consumer Reports apparently had some concerns regarding Navigate on autopilot. But those concerns were about like one part of Navigate on autopilot, not the whole system. And that one comment on that one part is now major headlines from all the news agencies. Like, Consumer Reports says Tesla suck, you know? And you're just like, what? No, they didn't. And they've even responded and said, no, that's not what we said. We said, like, this one part seems to be not the greatest. And we've all talked about our varying experiences with autopilot and stuff. It's like, it's one of those things where now, you know, the short sellers out there want Tesla to do bad from the stock market standpoint, so that way they can make money. It's just clear. We can hate on them, we can be angry about it, but this is capitalism. This is the world we live in. This is what the stock market is. It's people trying to make money, and so you have to like like morality has to like leave your brain if this is your if you really want to be in the market and play the market, you have to like not have morals to be successful. That's just clear. So this that's what we're seeing here, right? So these media outlets, you know, seemingly with some kind of relationship to these short sellers, are doing this to try to, you know, benefit themselves financially. Mm-hmm. So it's obvious to me. But then if you look at the fundamentals of the company, you're like, oh my God, this company's crushing it. And Chamath was the one that really inspired me to do that video. And yeah. I just love whenever he talks because he's so just to the point on it. So, you know, that, well, to me, that's where
so,
it's at.
So you
right
have
now.
The shorts who have a financial incentive to bash Tesla so mm-hmm. that they can make money. And then the actual media entities figured out a long time ago that if you have a negative Tesla headline, it's going to do well and they're going to get a lot of clicks and get a lot of ad revenue. I want to kind of shout out the Now You Know guys really quickly because they made a couple of points in their last video that I thought were really relevant. So there was the autopilot crash. Again, a car went under, a tractor trailer sheared off the top. Bad news, tragedy, obviously. But, you know, they made the point that there's been 4 deaths on autopilot and, like, what, 1.2 billion miles driven on autopilot? So that's, like, 1 death per every 300,000 miles or something. And you compare that to, you know, just the normal driving condition, then it's more like 1 death for every 30,000 miles driven or something like that. So
you,
it's like
you
way...
mean 300 million miles.
Oh, 300 million. Yeah, sorry. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
300 million. So, yeah, anyway, yeah, point made that, like...
orders of magnitude.
Orders
safer.
Of magnitude, like safer yeah. in autopilot. Yeah, but of course, there's been 4 deaths, and those just get blown up all over the place. And the other one was the fire in what Hong Kong, mm-hmm. the one car that caught fire in Hong Kong in a parking garage. Again, totally leaving off the point that like 30,000 cars, gas cars, catch fire on the road every single day. In the United mm-hmm. States or something like that. You know, of course, there's a whole lot more of them. But
in California,
you know, they
happens all the time
because
we're
things.
Filming movies, you know, and they just, you know.
And anytime it falls off a cliff, it just explodes. And that's
yeah, amazing.
Yeah. Michael Bay designs cars in California. But going back to the stock market thing just really quickly, I was thinking a second ago. I remember this was probably... It's been a while back, maybe 10, maybe even 15 years ago, but it was a long time ago. This is when I totally lost any kind of faith in what the stock market has to say about anything. There was a cow in Canada that there was a report that this cow in Canada had mad cow disease. And I guess it was at like a meat processing plant or something like that. So it was, you know, people panicked. And they started selling off all their meat stocks and stuff like that. And then it started affecting all these other industries, transportation and shipping and whatnot. And next thing you know, the entire stock market took this massive dive because a cow got sick in Canada.
Oh, my God.
Let's invest in that. Yeah. Let's put our retirement yeah. in that system. That's yeah.
And long term maybe sure, but like these short term things, it's like I gotta follow what's happening today. And
reactionary.
It's like reactionary
investing. Yeah, it's super. Well, it is frustrating.
And when it comes to and this is my view, this is not financial advice, but when it comes to investing in individual stocks, the reason I just philosophically don't do it. Is because what you're trying to compete with are like tons of algorithms developed by the yeah. smartest people in the world running on supercomputers. Yeah. So even if you click buy on a stock and you're like, yes, like I got a tip. Let's say I got inside information, whatever. By the time that you click buy and that signal gets out there, these other investment banks have actually bought and sold that stock like thousands of times before your order even goes through. And they've made just a fraction more money than you just did, so it's mm-hmm. one of those things. Like mm-hmm. you are just at a pure disadvantage as an mm-hmm. individual, as a retail investor.
The house wins.
Again, it's like a yeah. casino. The house always wins. Like you're mm-hmm. you don't have a chance.
It's a system designed, in my view. It's a system designed by rich people to separate poor people from their money. That's it.
So. I saw this somewhere, and this is probably conjecture and rumor and everything. So take it with whatever grain of. Salt or other spice you want to use. But like, you know, you always turmeric. See the old footage of the stock market floor of the New York Stock Exchange and the people with the little slips and they're yelling and screaming and got a phone to the ear and all that stuff.
Mortimer.
Yeah. Well, all that, like you said, all of that is algorithms and supercomputers now just handling all that. So, apparently the New York Stock Exchange floor now is basically just a set for TV
for Cheddar, for like
for Cheddar, for yeah. CNBC and all those guys. Like that's all it really is. It's all just a big show, kind of like
they're actually just
all
replaying videos from the 90s. You know,
it's just like, the style's really changed. It's kind of weird. They're wearing everyone's wearing fat ties and 4-piece suits.
Yeah, they've got StarTAC
phones.
Yeah, yeah, old cell phones. Like Zach from Saved by the Bell cell phones.
So the market is, you know, not reality. One thing I wanted to point out here, because I got this question regarding them beating Q2 doing well, is that the leasing price on the Model 3 is now extremely competitive. I don't know if you guys see this, but you can do a standard range plus, which I think is probably a phenomenal vehicle. I haven't seen one yet, but it, from what I know of it, this should be a great vehicle. You're looking at $399 a month for this lease.
Yeah, it's nuts.
That's like BMW prices, right? Like you're in the ballpark with every other what do they call them? Like affordable luxury, accessible luxury, right? Like you're not. This isn't a Bentley lease price or something. This is like a regular car you would. So that's insane, man. I mean, of course, like I've had numerous calls from friends that are like, "Man, it was always too expensive, but now $399 a month, like that's in my ballpark, right?" Yeah. I mean, of course, the weird thing is like you can't own it afterwards, but who cares? Like people probably don't want that anyways. If you're already leasing cars, you're not in the car ownership, you know, kind of mindset. So, you know, this leads us into this report from Cleantechnica that the Model 3 is the third best-selling vehicle in California in Q1 of 2019. So
that's period.
Say it again.
Period, like vehicle period.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So so this is top selling cars in California, Q1 2019. Number one is the Honda Civic. Number two is the Toyota Camry.
Cars.
Number three is the Tesla Model 3.
Cars, not vehicles.
Yeah, this is, cars.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yeah, passenger cars would be the correct
category. I was going to say, if it's number three in California,
it's like there's no pickups on that thing.
You know, I don't know how popular those are in California. Although, yeah, it's a big
I feel
state.
Like California is a little bit of an outlier compared to the rest of the U.S. as far as that goes.
Yeah, but look at this. It's only 90 cars or, you know, 86 cars behind the Toyota Camry.
That's crazy.
I mean, you basically can call that a tie, you know?
Right. Yeah. That is nuts. And it's got a little ways to go to catch up to the Honda Civic. We should probably read some of these numbers for people that are listening.
Yeah. Okay. Honda Civic, number one, 18,728. Toyota Camry, number two, 15,891. Tesla Model 3, 15,805.
Wow. And then the Accord's right behind that at 14,300. So
that's still a ways behind it. That's like over, 1,500 behind it or something like that, right?
Yeah.
So, and then it drops off like pretty tremendously after the, so you get Honda Accord, 14,300, Toyota Corolla, 14,075. Then it drops down to 6,000 for the Ford Fusion, which I thought they were done with that. I thought they were done selling that.
The Fusion?
Yeah. Well, just all cars.
Oh, yeah. No, they're focusing on pickups.
On pickups and
SUVs and pickups,
yeah,
they actually are. I think they are canceling any like the Focus and Fiesta and everything, and they're just going all pickups and SUVs.
It's unfortunate. I kind of like the Fusion. It's a nice little car.
I just thought it was a nice looking car.
Yeah.
Now, this kind of to your point earlier, Joe, that chart I showed. So, and if you guys watch a video, you know this, but I'll make this point again because this chart's being floated out there. I've seen people posting it and stuff. The chart shows 2019 Q1, was it 2019, was it first month or first quarter? I forget. First quarter versus all 2018 for its competitors. Now, people will look at that list and go, wait a minute, this isn't the Model 3 competitor. The Model 3 competitor is a Honda Civic. And you go, no. The EPA has actual classifications for vehicles. And so that list is.
Who would ever – do people actually think the Model 3 is comparable or in the same class as a Civic?
No, but – I mean, sure. But I get tons of comments. Well, that's too expensive compared to my 2012 Nissan Leaf. You know, right.
But
people do say, for example, even this chart right here. So we're looking at another chart here on Clean Technica, the same article. Top selling near luxury cars in California. So the Model 3, 15,800. Mercedes C-Class, 4,120. So, you know, more than triple. Lexus ES, 2,400. BMW 3 Series, 2,000. BMW 4 Series, 1,600. Now, I don't know about those because BMW has a freaking series for everything. And so you probably group a bunch of those together to make something that's basically the same car. But point being, I don't actually believe the C-Class, the Lexus ES, the BMW 3 Series, or 4 Series are technically in the same class as the Model 3. And do you guys know why that is?
Because they're German?
No. It's because the class of a vehicle is determined by the cabin space, by the actual amount of storage space that the vehicle has. And
internal, like passenger volume, or including like cargo volume?
Both. Yeah. So the Model 3, I could find it somewhere, but it's something like just barely in this class of now midsize luxury vehicles, luxury sedans.
Really?
So the technical like competitor to the Model 3 is like the BMW 5 Series, not the 3 Series.
Wow.
But most people don't think of it that way, right? Most people don't think, right?
Because the dimensions are like almost identical to a BMW 3 Series.
The exterior dimensions,
yes,
not the interior, and that's what they judge it on.
Mm-hmm.
So you know, we can, and this I made this point in the video, we can kind of twist and turn this, and we can say, oh well, this makes more sense, and that's fine to do that. But we have to be clear, like we are. Like doing a a comparison where you have one vehicle in one class and one in a different class.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, the Model 3 in this example, absolutely crushing its competitors. And those are actually the more popular competitors there, the BMW 3 Series and all that. So
I got something similar to this one time when I did a video about Blue Origin's new Glen Rocket.
Uh-huh.
And like the most common comment is, why didn't you compare it to the BFR, you know, to Starship? Mm-hmm. Like, I got that comment. I still get it, like, probably almost every day. And I state in the video, we're comparing rockets of the same class. We're comparing heavy lift rockets. The Starship is a super heavy lift vehicle. You know, New Glenn is at the peak of a heavy lift vehicle, but it's right in the exact same class as Falcon Heavy. And not only that, then I took and compared all the rockets that have Air Force contracts. You know, so I put them all in the same class, a nice, simple, like, we can directly compare these because they are competing for the exact same contracts, period. And people were still like, no, you left out Starship. Like, yes, I did.
You didn't do the thing I wanted you to do.
You
unsubscribed.
You made it look like New Glenn's better than it is because you didn't compare it to BFR.
Just lost a subscriber. So here's the actual thing, if you guys were curious. So the EPA size classifications, vehicle sizes by interior combined passenger and cargo volume index.
Wow.
So the Model 3 is something like 112 cubic feet of passenger plus cargo volume.
And that's so 3,115 liters for those of you that don't know what a foot is.
What? No, cubic feet. Wait.
Feet.
Okay. 3,200 liters. Whatever. I'm a dumb American. Give me a break.
They don't have feet in Europe. They just walk around on stubs.
Sounds like a video joke. Yeah, so there you go. So those are the classifications. You're looking at them on the screen. So subcompact is under 100 cubic feet. The compact is 100 to 109.9 cubic feet. The midsize is 110 to 119.9. And then large is 120. So you know, it's kind of funny because, like, in this same categorization, you have essentially the Model S and the Model X in the same category, mm-hmm. technically.
You know. Would the Y be in that category eventually?
For sure, yeah.
Really?
Yeah, it should have more. Well, I don't know if it beats 120 cubic feet.
It's funny, it's percentage-wise, there's not, I mean, we're looking at like, you know, 7 or 8% or whatever between these classes is the difference between like minis, compact, subcompact. It just surprises me that that's how they classify it, you know?
There's so many things like that. You're like, why is this called this when, mm-hmm. you know, just when technology changes? Like because it's an electric car, the exterior size of the vehicle ratio to the interior size is much lower. Like you have much more interior space compared to how the footprint of the vehicle.
Right.
Right. But at the time when the EPA made these classifications, that probably wasn't even like a figment in someone's imagination that one day this wouldn't make sense.
That the drivetrain will be reduced.
A good way I do like to think of it now, like I think a fair comparison is where people are spending their money. Because you may not like when I think of competition in business, a lot of times I think like are you going to buy this or this? Right. And so whether or not those two things technically fall into the same category, if you would buy one over the other and those are the two that people are weighing the options between, I think it's a fair way to call it a competitor. So like in that regard, I think you can say the BMW 3 Series or whatever is a competitor, or even the Honda Civic, if, you know, somebody was on that fence, which would kind of be weird. But, you know.
Yeah. That still just surprises me. Actually, I have to say I'm surprised. I didn't know that Mercedes outsells BMW almost 2-1 in that C-Class versus a 3-Class. And that kind of shocks me. I always thought BMW is a little more popular than Mercedes. But
in California here?
I guess in California does it differently.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. That's our state motto. Do think different. I think one of the companies came up with that or stole it. Hmm.
No. Mm-hmm. Definitely not. That's fun. That's good news.
So can I kind of have a thought about my Model 3 I wanted to share real quick. Let me just jump in. So, I don't know. I was driving around the other day with a friend, who had not been in a Tesla before. So I'm kind of driving and kind of showing stuff, and it hit me how much I've gotten used to all the stuff that the car does. And it's funny because at first I was the same boat of anybody who is new to a car and just like, whoa, look at this. Oh, that's amazing. Wow. You know, and then I kind of got used to it. And now I've gone completely the other direction where I'm like, why doesn't every car do this?
Yeah.
Like, it just doesn't even make any sense. Like, it's, we talk about how top of the line the technology is, but is it? I mean, it's basically an iPad on wheels. Like, it's not that high technology for most of this. I mean, maybe autopilot and that kind of thing, but like just the controlling everything through this interface and whatnot. And I'm just like, this isn't like technology from the future or something. It's just basic computer stuff that any car could do, but they just don't for some reason. And I'm just kind of like, I'm at the point now where I'm just like, this makes sense now. Like, why does this have more processing power than a car? You know,
that's exactly my sense. Like, I've always, or for many years, hated cars or just thought cars were lame and they sucked. And that was the exact sentiment. I'm like, why would I have to buy a DVD for $2,000 to load a map in my navigation system when my phone does it like just seamlessly updating in real time, no matter where I'm at in the world? This is like the most archaic, dumb thing ever. When my reasoning was always like, you can't fit this little thing, the processing power in this little tiny device, in the car anywhere. You have no space, really. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, that exact same line of thinking is what led me to buy a Tesla, because I'm like, oh, they get it. And even then, I'm like, oh, it still sucks. Like, there's still a bazillion things that they could do on top of it. You know?
Here's a really interesting one. Like, for instance, I was listening to a podcast called Reply All. It's a really good podcast where they kind of talk about like all things internet or like weird quirks and stuff. And someone wrote in saying every time they load up one type of podcast, like over Bluetooth. So they're using their phone, they're Bluetoothing it to their Mazda car. Just this one podcast will crash their entire infotainment system.
What?
Yes. Over Bluetooth. And they went through this whole thing. They tracked down. They even found the person that coded the actual infotainment system for this Mazda to eventually figure it out. And I don't want to do a spoiler alert on it. But the interesting is the owner of this car said, okay, they found the solution. They couldn't. This is a 2016 car. They go, well, I guess I can't afford to get the firmware update.
Yeah.
Your car's still under warranty and it's breaking.
Yeah.
And they're not even willing to give you an update for free. Like, that is unbelievable to me.
Yeah.
That seems almost criminal. Like, sell you a car that they know have a known issue now, they have a fix to it, and they're not going to fix it. You have to pay for a firmware update, and it's you have just, to go in and get it.
Everything else in our life has shifted to a new paradigm, except for cars. except for a very small number of this one company's cars, you know. Anyway.
No, exactly. So in a video recently I was talking about as well how, like, I still pretty much just focus on Teslas because not many of the other cars are that impressive to me. Even the electric ones coming out, except for, like, the crazy concept cars. Those are pretty cool. But, you know, those won't make it to even so, my buddy Dan just got to go drive the Mercedes-Benz EQC. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, I'm looking at it going, man, that's a nice car. Mercedes definitely knows how to make cars. That's obvious. And I'm like, but I'm like, why is the screen so small? Is that what's the aspect ratio on that? What's the is that Gorilla Glass or like is that an OLED display? Like, when are we going to start reviewing cars like we review phones?
Yeah, but the scary thing with that is people have this hate relationship with technology too, though, for some reason, where people are like, I hate my phone, it never works. Like, wait, your phone is awesome.
Yeah,
think about all the stuff your phone does. You love your phone.
Like, if you went back 300 years and told people what this little piece of plastic in your pocket could do, they would burn you at the stake. It's witchcraft.
If you went back 5 years and had to use your phone from 5 years ago, 5 years, that's nothing. You used to have a phone for your entire life. My grandparents had probably had one phone, you know, or whatever, like their whole life. And now if you had to go back 5 years and use that phone today, you would say, this sucks. Like, your phone now is amazing. What is going on?
Casey Neistat did that. He has an old phone that doesn't run any social media stuff. That way he doesn't spend time or waste time on it.
It's not a bad idea. It's just crazy, though. And I think that paradigm shift in cars, like, it makes sense now. Make it so the car can update itself and be better than it was when you bought it.
Like, here's a big deal, right? Whether or not the car is electric, BMW, Mercedes, anybody, Toyota, Honda could make compared to what they have now, this giant leap forward in technology to make the user experience of the driver and the passengers amazing. Mm-hmm. Put a screen in there and just copy what Tesla did. It's not rocket science, right? It's not whatever. It's literally just the basic stuff. But for whatever reason, they don't do that. They think of cars as like this different thing. And I don't know what the holdup is. But I could definitely see like a tactic from somebody that an automaker that doesn't want to go electric, which is basically all of them, to do that. Say like, look, yeah, okay, cool. We're going to go electric. You know, we're working on it. We got to get it right. It's going to take time, yada, yada, yada. But check out this awesome interior with this giant screen and these updates and blah, blah, blah. Like, you could basically advertise and add all the Tesla stuff that is not the electric part, and I bet people would be like, this is incredible, this is the most amazing update ever in the Honda Civic or something. But they just don't. I don't know. It's like more tech, more people that make phones need to start getting into the auto industry for this to happen. Because I think that's, like you're saying, Joe, that's the paradigm shift. Like, I really, really, like, I've not reviewed any other car but a Tesla. Other than I took a Chevy Bolt for a ride one time. But, like, next time, whenever I get a chance, Mercedes and me have been chatting on Twitter. I don't know if they're just trolling me or if they're you know, flirting with me. But I literally want to do that. I want to get in the car and say, okay, I want to talk to an engineer. What kind of display is this? You know, what's the resolution? What's the lumosity or whatever? Like, the brightness and the contrast. I want to talk about this not from the perspective of a car. Because I don't care about cars. Cars are dumb, and we've, like, beat that horse to death. Now let's talk about the tech. You know, where's my damn headphone jack, right? Things like that.
It's interesting.
You know what's funny is you coming from a data background, and I'll just use the word financial or economics anyway, because it's part of the name of your channel. Every financial person I know, every like, accountant, like, really in the whole money world person that I know, I'm running out of words, hates cars. Like if you talk about buying a car, it's like, oh, God, it's the worst thing you can possibly buy. Get something really cheap, put as little money into it as possible. I just think it's funny when you're talking about how much you hate cars, because it seems like every financial and economics person I know is just like, that's the worst thing you can buy.
It is. It clearly is. I mean, my car before a Tesla was a 99 Toyota Tacoma. You know, I still have it. I still love it. But point being, like, I was like, I do not care. Like, this thing does what it needs to do. You know, I'll spend money on other things. You know,
yeah. It's just like, you know, I feel like, you know, traditionally buying a car is like digging a hole in the ground, just like continually,
hole in the ground that like almost building,
almost like building a tunnel of some kind.
Really?
Is Joe not caught onto his story yet, or is this Ben's story?
That is the absolute worst one we've ever done. I love you, Tim.
Sorry, I haven't slept this week.
Just a little less now.
Oh, so
is this me? Okay,
I don't know whose story is this. What are we talking about?
Typically, this would be my story, but Ben is the one who found it, and I haven't read anything about it, so I'll let you.
Okay,
take.
All right, more me time. Yay. All right, so the boring, speaking of holes in the ground that transport people, the Boring Company, one of Elon's less interesting companies, but the only time, side note, the only party I've ever been to where there was a full-on battle between knights in front of a castle, well, like a tower. So Boring Company, you've got some style. I enjoy you. they just won a contract to build a tunnel, a loop, or whatever you want to call it, in Las Vegas for $48 million. And the idea is to ferry passengers around the new convention center. And they want this to be operational by end of year, just in time for CES 2020. However, the new convention center will not be available then, but I would not be surprised at all if every tech YouTuber on the planet is invited to go take a ride in it, et cetera, et cetera. And this is actually not the first contract the Boring Company has won. It's the second one. The first one was from Chicago, where they have a contract for, I think, $1 billion to go from O'Hare to downtown. Which $1 billion for that was like 12 times cheaper than the next cheapest bid. And then they have lots of other contracts that are kind of in the works or whatever. One is from LAX to Dodger Stadium, and another one is from DC to Baltimore. So kudos to the Boring Company. Exciting stuff. The big thing that was confusing to me was that the plan is still to have Tesla Model Xs be the transport method. Instead of a train or something like that, even though the, I mean, honestly, in my personal opinion, the concept of the Model X seemed kind of hokey and kind of just thrown together at the last minute. But the tunnel thing is cool. I think that's phenomenal. I really I really wish they had developed these pods that they had kind of you know, sketched out a while ago. But yeah, good things for the Boring Company and for the patrons of the Las Vegas Convention Center.
I had someone point out, so we were talking about this, I think, last week, how one of the, what was it? I think we were talking last week about how Elon does things and we're like, oh, you know, from our perspective, I think, Ben, you were talking about how, like, from our perspective, it's like, whoa, you know, he's going to go just bore a tunnel now. But, like, how he's been thinking about it, I realized, or someone pointed out, like, literally everything he's doing directly lines up with colonizing Mars. The Boring Company?
Yeah. I thought it was like more the end of humanity was the one.
But I mean, like, solar. Like, he's now an expert in solar and battery storage technology, which is perfect for trying to, you know, live on Mars. Digging underground, perfect for living on Mars. Electric propulsion, perfect for getting around on Mars. Like, everything in his company directly relates to getting to and living on Mars. It's insane.
Which
the more I think about, the more like
idea, said Joe Scott.
But the more I think about it,
nobody
like,
disagree with me on that.
It's not a good idea, but somebody's got to do it. But it's just nuts to think that like everything he's in, everything basically, including Starlink, like that's gonna help with Mars. That's what it was. It was like how Starlink's
How would that help with Mars?
Mars will need its own communication system, so he'll learn how to make a you know, internet constellation around Mars. So they can do global communication and probably their own form of GPS on Mars and things like that, you know? I mean, he'll be able to deploy that same system to Mars, maybe in, like, one or two Starship launches.
Neuralink might be the only thing that doesn't really tie into Mars perfectly. But
who knows? They might say, like, hey, we're doing this so that we can, you know, figure out something that we didn't know. I don't know.
Yeah, I think it has more to do with keeping AI from destroying us, but
yeah.
become.
But no, that is a good point, though. Like all of his stuff kind of lines up toward that goal, and that's always been his goal, clearly.
Yeah.
Well, that's what SpaceX was all about, right? Didn't he write some email that was like, it was about going public for SpaceX? Tim, you're familiar with that one?
And then said basically we won't until we have fulfilled our goal of colonizing Mars.
Well, I don't know about colonizing. I think he said like the Mars mission is secure or something like that.
Yeah.
Which, yeah. Who knows what that even means? I still, yeah, I don't know. So I just finished that Daniel Suarez book, Delta V, which was a great book, but it wasn't my favorite of his because it was a bit too real. Like it was just too very like, it almost felt like I was reading nonfiction. And his books are kind of typically more out there, which is what I enjoy. But one of the in the book, they made this whole case why going to Mars was a bad idea. I haven't watched your video yet, Joe, but basically the idea, the contrasting view or the opinion was it would be better to create spin, they called them spin grav ships, you know, ships that spin around and simulate gravity. For humans to live on those than it would to try to exist on Mars because of, you know, radiation and the atmosphere and just like everything about Mars basically that is so not
that,
friendly
that's
to
Bezos's
humans.
Thesis basically.
Is it really?
Yeah,
that's the O'Neill cylinders. That's what Jeff Bezos talked about at his last presentation.
That's so funny. I mean, I wonder like so many of these things like maybe that was why the book I was like, okay, yeah, this sounds like something that could really happen. You know, and you know, not to give away too much of the book, but one of the things was like they were having these same debates, the space titans, they called them, all like, you know, on stage, like fighting about this. And then it turns out one of the dudes already did it. So then like later on, it was like, oh, hey, by the way, I didn't get permission for this, but check it out. It works. Hey, you know,
That's cool. Well, that's the topic of, I mean, are we ready to move on? Because actually that would be a good segue because Elon actually mentioned.
Now let's give Ben something else to talk about real quick.
Yes, I need more me time.
So Elon's been going on a little bit of a we'll call it a rant. Is that the right word? Sure. So I put up this visualization of a full flow stage combustion cycle engine on Twitter, which is what the Raptor engine is going to be. And it turned into this whole, like, Elon just talking about everything on here for some reason. He keeps coming back and, like, starting new threads and stuff. I don't know if he's just, like, I think he eats, sleeps, and breathes full flow stage combustion cycle engine. So maybe he's just, like, really excited. I don't know. He sees that and goes, yes! So anyway, I really wanted to talk about what he said last night with the, where was that? Oh, man, it's going to be hard to track this down. Silly Elon. But basically, he talked about the O'Neill cylinders. Let's see. Oh, gosh. I'm failing at this, guys. Anyway, someone provide some background music while I try to find what Elon was saying about these. Because he keeps starting new threads, so it's really confusing.
Grab that guitar,
guys.
Give us some marimba.
I need some new strings on it, actually.
Where the F? Okay, we're just going to do this because sometimes it's easier to just do this. So he kind of like him basically Bezos and Elon kind of go back and forth. So someone goes, what are your thoughts on O'Neill structures that like Jeff Bezos talked about? And he said, makes no sense. In order to grow the colony, you'd have to transport vast amounts of mass from planets, moons, and asteroids. Would be like trying to build the USA in the middle of the Atlantic Ocean, which I found really interesting. Yeah. What do you guys think? I mean, do you think that's like, I mean, Ben, did you, after hearing that book, what did you think about O'Neill cylinders? Did they sound like the way to go?
Well, okay. So the big deal in the book was not to transport stuff from Earth, but from asteroids.
Mm-hmm.
And so they go mine, like, you know, just tremendous amounts of raw materials from an asteroid, and then they transport it back to Leo or whatever, or some kind of orbit, or I think it was an orbit around the moon or something like that. I don't remember, but yeah. So the idea wasn't because getting it from Earth. Well, first off, you're depleting Earth of those resources, plus the cost.
It's hard to get
is
off
just
of.
Stupid of launching things. Yeah. So it'd be much cheaper if you could get them from other places that are already in space. Like, yes. The and the way that they described it was the cost of Delta V.
Yep.
Like the cost per force you need to move it.
Mm-hmm.
So that was the idea there.
Joe, what do you think about O'Neill cylinders and all this colonization stuff?
It's an interesting question because whether you're talking about the Mars colony or building massive structures in space, they're both things that have their own challenges, and we haven't done either one of them.
Mm-hmm.
That's why I kind of feel like doing a colony on the moon is a nice little in-between there, because, the thing about going to Mars is, like, you are totally on your own. You're like the settlers that sailed over to the Americas, and there's no way back. There's no Skyping, King Philip for more resources or something. If we could go to the moon, it's, like, right there. It's a three-day trip, and we could learn how to... create radiation shielding and live outside of our nice little magnetosphere. And the whole building and massive construction in space, we need to learn how to do that anyway, because there's only so much that you can take from the ground to space. Mm-hmm. Like, eventually you're going to have to, like, do construction up there. I don't know. It seems like two vastly different and equally challenging problems. Maybe mm-hmm. a video could be done among this.
I for one, I like the idea of I like the idea of definitely utilizing resources that are already in space. So, like, using the moon, like Artemis, the book, using the moon's resources to build things in space, and same with asteroids to build things in space. To me, that makes a ton of sense. Mars does seem really, really. The more I think about it, I used to be 100% Team Mars, but lately I'm like, let's get back to the moon.
Yeah.
Mars would be a good challenge, and I really want us to explore it, but I don't want us to, like, explore it. I don't know. Like, I don't want us to do the same thing we did for Apollo, which is, like, basically just lay in there, go hang out for, like, 3 days. Like, if we're going to go explore it, let's, like, make sure we actually have the ability to properly set up camp there and make it sustainable and survivable and not just... the most hardcore extreme thing ever, make it, like, a little bit bougie, which maybe Starship can do, maybe a couple Starships down there.
If they need a consultant on the bougie, I'm in. I can help with this.
Starbucks, like, on the moon.
Yeah. Like, go glamping, glamour camping on Mars, instead of just, like, this, like, hardcore extreme, we're going to be just eating freeze dried food for a year and a half on the surface of Mars, like living out of a tin can, like, and maybe that's what Elon's big plan is. Like, hey, we're going to land three starships. The third one will have humans on it. The first two will set up this cool camp with tunnels. We're going to have all this stuff, and it's going to be decent.
So let me play devil's advocate on the moon thing. Who owns the moon? What country?
Nobody.
So who's gonna? So if the U.S. starts doing stuff up there, would that?
Isn't
cause...
there a treaty about the moon?
There is a treaty,
but
no one owns
says,
it.
But...
basically, no one owns it. But
I'm just repeating stuff from the book at this point.
Yeah,
but that was their big argument against the moon, was like, oh well, people, because if you start, like, changing the way the moon looks, to that affects the entire planet. And there would be, like, people opposed to that, like me.
Yeah, I feel like if there were any mining operations, like heavy mining operations on the moon, they would probably have to be on the far side so that we don't see it from here.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. It would be.
I mean,
I think
part of me
really
thinks
cool.
It would be really exciting to look up at the moon and see, especially, like,
light.
Some lights on it.
Yeah.
From,
I think that'd be amazing.
Especially if it's not a full moon, obviously it'd be way too bright, but when it's. Yeah,
right.
New moon.
Yep.
I'm using my hand like that makes any difference whatsoever.
I think that's super cool. But anyway, that's an interesting thing that Elon was just talking about this last night, and Ben, for once, he did something space related. But I wanted to just kind of go through some of this stuff, because SpaceX, we're still getting just more and more little snippets here from Elon about the Raptor engine, which is good because I'm finishing up my video and things are actually confirming what I'm talking about, which is good. So Elon mentions that the turbopump propellant flow to achieve chamber pressure is quite tricky. So He's talking about how the Raptor has an inducer and two impellers with 100,000 shaft horsepower. He's talked about 100,000 horsepower before. That's how much power it takes to power the Raptor engine. And I'm going to talk about this quite a bit in my video, but really, a rocket engine has nothing, you know, the big nozzle that you see, like when you look at like an F or a Saturn V, you know, and you see all those engines sticking out the bottom. And you look at the big nozzles. That's the very last. That's like looking at a race car and saying, "Look at the tires. Those are how fast it goes." Like, no. The tires are like the last bit. That's the rubber meets the road there. But like, that's not at all what powers the car.
Can I object there for a second?
Yes.
Tires are actually the limiting factor in acceleration for
cars. Well, of course. In everything. So, they're the limiting factor in everything, but they're not what powers the car at all.
No, but like the reason a regular production car has never broken 2 seconds 0 to 60 is not because of the engine or any of those things. It's because of the tires.
Just like there's a reason that we haven't exceeded a certain amount of specific impulse with an engine and reached the theoretical maximum because the nozzle's never going to be big enough to do that.
I don't like the nozzle analogy.
Well, I'm sorry. That's what it is,
though. I reject
though.
Your analogy.
Without, I object.
You can have great tires. It's going to be the same as having a well-designed engine bell, really.
I did look up what an impeller is.
It's going to turn your power into acceleration. It's going to turn your power, the thrust that you're producing, and it's going to turn it into something, basically. Same with tires. So when you point at a rocket engine and look at a nozzle and say, "There's the engine," you are not looking anywhere near the engine. The engine really, the combustion chamber still almost really isn't the engine. The combustion chamber is where you actually put the two, you know, your fuel and your oxidizer together. So if we look at this chart here that I have up on the screen, at this bit here, so where the red is and there's a combustion chamber, yes, that's like where the end result is, but it's all a result of the power pack of your pre-burners, your turbines, and your impellers, your pumps. And if those need to be higher power and higher pressure than your combustion chamber, because otherwise stuff goes backwards and that's not good. So, you know, pressure always flows from high to low. So it's just crazy to think in order to produce thrust and to make power out of the bottom of this thing, you have to have 100,000 horsepower per impeller, which is just absolutely nuts. But yeah, so basically Elon keeps going here saying that the turbine spins, about pretty basic stuff. But what he did start mentioning is that they're all of a sudden, they're about to complete serial number 5 Raptor engine. And last we had heard, we kind of started hearing about serial number 4, maybe heading out to Boca Chica soon. And serial number 5 now is being produced. And then he says they're going to be ramping up producing Raptor engines to an engine every 3 days. That's nuts. That's insane. So that's already showing off how, what this is going to look like, because they're going to need, you know, eventually Starship will have 31 of these Raptor engines on the first stage. And now it sounds like maybe 6 on the upper stage. Yes, they changed that. Elon goes, Mark 1 and Mark 2 ships at Boca Chica and Cape will fly with at least 3 engines, maybe all 6. And Eric Ralph from Teslarati goes, .. 7? Question mark, winky face, because, you know, last we knew there is a 7 on Starship. And he goes, after the Game of Thrones finale, we dropped it to 6.
Come on.
Which I don't even know.
Dracarys,
I don't quite get that.
Please, Dracarys, telling you.
What, can someone explain this? Can someone explain this to me? What does that mean?
Okay, there are 7 kingdoms in Game of Thrones, and the Iron Throne rules all of the 7 kingdoms, except for after the Game of Thrones finale, which, if you haven't seen by now, you deserve this spoiler. they change it because the North wants to remain free and independent. So now
they do a Brexit.
The
North does a Brexit,
but it's Sansa. So would it be a Sexit? I don't know. Anyways, so
sexy.
Now there's 6 kingdoms in Westeros instead of 7. See,
dang,
they are going to say Dracarys at launch time at T-0 instead of liftoff. They're going to say Dracarys. I know it. I'm calling it right now. Bet you 100 push-ups, Tim.
I love everything I know exactly all those words.
Maybe
so. Anyway. So he says that they're going to go back to 6 engines, or 2-6. They've They used to show six engines like back in 2017 when they first showed BFR as kind of the slimmed down 9 meter thing. They had four vacuum engines and two sea level engines. And then he later mentioned, oh, we'll put three sea level engines on there so we have like triple redundancy for landing burns. And now he's saying three and three, which would be interesting. I'm guessing they're going to go back to that like triangle of sea level engines in the middle, kind of a cluster of them, so that if, you know, if you have them in a row, like when we're looking at this picture here, you can see there's three Raptor engines in a row. When you do that, that's although they're pretty close and they're inside that inner perimeter, we talked about this once on the show where, you know, if they have engine out, you want those as close to the center as possible so it's not inducing, you know, torque and rotating the stage. Yeah. But what's better than having all three like that in a row is having all three in a little cluster, kind of like a triangle down here, but centered so that they're all as close to the center as possible. Then if you did that, you could have large three optimized engines kind of lined up with the flat edges of that triangle. This is interesting, and this makes sense, but it's just so funny. They keep going back and forth and back and forth and back and forth. And it some people might see that as like they have no idea what they're doing. Other people will say it's because this is a giant science experiment and they're not solidifying any plans until they solve the first problem first. Which I like.
Well, how often did they iterate on the Falcon 9 over the years, even as they were launching them and even as they were in use?
Every rocket.
Yeah, almost like, every rocket. So I think we can expect that with this too.
Yep. Yep. And I think some people just see it as like frustrating, but who cares? It's not for you to be frustrated by. Like, doesn't they don't owe you a clean, concise plan of their rockets.
Be frustrated if the thing doesn't work.
Yeah. Or don't and learn from it. You know, that's what they do is they do this stuff and then they learn from it. So he basically says they're aspirationally going to start doing Vacuum Raptor again. And then he says they're hoping for 380 seconds of specific impulse, which is very good. For reference, the Merlin upper stage vacuum is about 340. But that's 380 still quite a bit below a good hydrogen engine. So like the upper stage of, say, like an Atlas V is a hydrogen engine. And they have like 450 seconds of specific impulse, which is very, very good. So 380 is good. It's an improvement over the Merlin. But it's not like an incredible vacuum engine. I think anything over 400 starts to get into like, yeah, now we're talking. So then all of a sudden he, you know, so SpaceX cast asks with Raptor developing progressing smoothly, how is Vernier RCS thruster development going for Starship? Still methane based? And I've asked this again and he basically did say it was nitrogen or something. So now he repeats it's nitrogen for vacuum. So it sounds like they're hardly going to do any. So then he goes on to say aero surfaces and high gimbal angle main engines for atmosphere. So basically they're not going to be relying on thrusters at all for the landing burn and all that stuff. They're going to rely on the aero surfaces, which, it's crazy. And then high gimbal angle means they can steer those Raptor engines a lot in order to, you know, control it. So, yeah, a lot of fun info dropping out of him. All this being said, they're looking at, what was it? Basically like the 31st, probably doing a hop or so, which is awesome with, the new Starship. Hang on. So
next Friday or,
next Friday. Yeah. So yeah, I think that's cool. That's fun stuff in my opinion. So Starship, we talked about it last week a little bit. They're adding the RCS thrusters or those, you know, those nitrogen pods. And, they're starting to get ready to fly that thing around. I think next week on the 28th, they're going to be closing the road, starting to do, just like last time when they got ready for that hop, that little tiny tethered hop, they were basically like first doing like a pressure test of the tanks. And then they did like a spin pump test. And then they did like a pre-burner test. They just kind of did all these like incremental, you know, step up. They are installing a new engine. It sounds like serial number four, maybe, or one or four. I've heard multiple things, and I don't know. They're putting a Raptor back on it soon, and they're going to do all these tests leading up to it to make sure everything's good to go. And if all goes well, I think it sounds like they will try hopping by the end of the month, and it sounds like it'll be at least a 20-meter hop, maybe even some translation sideways. We'll see. Sounds awesome.
Is there any update to the Dragon capsule thing, the anomaly?
None.
Still no details? Because I thought that's what we were waiting on, right? Like an investigation or something like that?
Yep. It's an ongoing investigation. And
so nothing yet.
nothing. I mean, and remember, NASA is directly involved in this investigation, so it's not like, you know, it's not like they're just like, oh, forget about it. You know, it's like NASA has huge interest in making sure that they get the answers.
Obviously, yeah, because then they had originally planned to put people up this year.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah,
what's your over under on how that's looking now?
Every day that we don't hear any update, it definitely scares me. I'm really starting to think next year, though, 2020 for SpaceX.
Which is barely 6 months and change away, so, you know.
So the standard 6 months away.
But New Shepard is supposed to take some people up before the end of the year.
Yeah. Yeah, New Shepard.
Suborbital, so you could put an asterisk by that, but.
Yeah. New Shepard will definitely fly people this year. I have no doubt in that. They've had a huge testing campaign of that vehicle. Way too much testing
too
campaign
much,
of that vehicle.
I feel like.
Yeah. They're very ready to put people on that thing.
That's Blue Origin?
Yep. That's their little suborbital one. There you go, Ben. You're doing it. You're really doing it.
I told you, at the Tesla event, until Joe showed up, at the Falcon Heavy, I was like the expert. Besides Trip, obviously.
Right.
But of all the Tesla people there, they were asking questions. I'm like, no. Like, wait, you don't know the answer to that? Like, I'm the dummy, and you don't? But they're like, you know. They're focused on one area, and this was way outside
right.
of that. So,
right. Did we talk last week about the Florida Starship?
I don't think we did, but I saw something about this.
So first, let me clarify, because I feel like I still get this question a lot. So there's currently kind of three development vehicles being built. There's two down in Boca Chica, Texas, and there's one being built very quickly already in Florida. So we're calling it like this. The Star Hopper is that trash can looking thing with no nose on it that is just learning how to hop and kind of operate with liquid methane and with the Raptor engine. And then they started building in Boca Chica, we started seeing and look like the same start almost as the last Star Hopper. And we learned that that was the Starship Mark I prototype. And then secretly behind the scenes, all of a sudden, SpaceX is building Mark II behind the scenes in Florida. And interestingly, like inland in Florida. Let me pull this up on a map here.
Why? I kind of wonder if there's a new market for stainless steel water towers. All of a sudden, water towers and the water tower makers of the country are like, who?
So
water towers just that hover about 100 feet above the ground?
Right. So just in case it's not very public yet, I'm going to give you guys a broad sense of where this is. I don't want to be the one that leaks something that I'm not supposed to. So, okay, so up here is Kennedy Space Center. SpaceX launches. Let me go to Earth view here quick. Can you guys see this okay?
Mm-hmm.
So up here is where SpaceX launches. That's 39A. Slick 40 is right here. Can you see my mouse too?
Mm-hmm. Slick
okay.
40? Okay.
Yeah, SLC 40, Space Launch Complex 40. So SpaceX has two launch pads, here and here. So sorry, if you're looking at this or listening to this, the here and here are obviously like on the Cape, like near the water. They're a good, this is quite a ways away. This is probably, you know, what, like 8 kilometers away from the visitor center, which is all considered, all of this is basically considered Merritt Island and mm-hmm. Cape Canaveral.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's...
Isn't it like a nature preserve around there, too? That's why there's
yes.
no other buildings or anything?
Yep. And also that it's a, you know, military base here for Cape Canaveral Air Force Station.
Right.
Which is... So Cape Canaveral Air Force Station is this whole
Space
section
Force.
Of Cape Canaveral. And then this is Merritt Island is where the Visitor Center and Kennedy Space Center technically is.
And there's a Waffle House right down here I could tell you about. It's really...
But now here's what's interesting. So, Joe, you were loving Blue Origin's factory.
Yeah.
Right? Which is right there. Which makes sense because you can just ship it to your launch pad, like right here. Which is, you know, just hop, skipping away. You know, you're already on the island. You can ship it over. You don't even have to go over public roads, basically. You're already on base, pretty much. I mean, you're right outside of the gate. You can just ship it, whoop, all
Blue Origin
on,
is literally, like, on top of Kennedy Space Center.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. It is, like, at the gate. They
right.
can open up their...
You can't not see it.
Right.
Yeah, there's not a selfie to be had in the Rocket Garden that doesn't have Blue Origin in the background.
Yeah, basically. So, you know, they open up their doors to their rocket factory. They roll out a rocket. They open up the gate to Kennedy Space Center and voila, slash Cape Canaveral Air Force Station. And they're rolling a rocket towards their launch pad. SpaceX is currently building this Starship Hopper somewhere down here in Cocoa.
Oh, okay. It's not too far, though. A few miles.
But look it. I will tell you this. It's not next to the water. It's not next to the water. So you can't just put it on a barge and ship it there. They're going to have to carry this 9 meter wide, 30 foot wide, you know, however many, I don't know how tall it'll be, 30 meters tall or something like that. Massive vehicle down public roads to get it there.
Maybe it's not supposed to ever go up. Maybe it's just them testing out some construction techniques to figure out how to build it or something.
I don't think so, actually.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, that's actually...
Oh, man, I thought I had a good idea.
That is actually... Well, that... Hang on. The more I think about it, that is a fair thought that maybe...
Strike for you.
Maybe this specific one that they're building at this... Because this is being built basically at a metal factory. And maybe for now, they are just building it to see what's the best way to build it. Because they are competing... The Mark 1 and Mark 2, they're kind of competing teams, each building their own version. Mm. So maybe you're right. Maybe they are literally just building it. I hadn't really thought about that. And then once they know how to build it the best, then they'll start producing them on site. That would make sense. I don't know. But I also
maybe they're
going
to launch it over populated areas just for fun.
Just say, screw it. We'll take the fine. We believe in ourselves.
That's all it is a fine.
I mean what else could they
not
do?
Not like we're taking away your license and if you do it again we'll blow that thing out of the sky. You're in Florida after all. Come on.
That probably is true. Right there's probably some truth to that. So but what I've heard or what I understand is that they do intend to launch this vehicle, which would mean they have to transport this vehicle across public roads, which is just nuts.
Maybe the Boring Company has already built a tunnel underneath.
And they're gonna launch it out. We were all wrong about that. Why don't they just back then?
Oh, so this is just crazy though. Watching this thing be built this fast, it looks like it's a little shinier than the other ones, which is fun. I don't know. This is just crazy, guys.
The shinier, the better. Do we have a why don't they just this week?
We do have a why don't they just this week.
Ooh.
Let's wrap on a why don't they just. So you guys ready for this one? Ben, this is going to be in your wheelhouse, so I'll start.
Oh, man.
Joe, and then Ben. If fully recharging your Tesla to 100... This comes from Marcus S. at KSCLC39A. Hey, 39A.
Kennedy Space Center Launch Complex 39A.
There you go. Wow.
I decoded Marcus. His name.
So he says, if fully recharging your Tesla to 100% is bad, then why don't they just configure the chargers to stop charging shy of 100%, say 95%? I'm not even going to answer that, Joe, because I feel like I've talked way too much. My throat hurts. Joe, take it away. And then Ben, take it
away. Well, my thought when I saw this on Twitter was I think they kind of do that, actually. Or their 100% is padded a little bit. There's a little bit of extra on there because I remember there was some discussion between Elon and somebody on Twitter or something where this whole thing about don't charge all the way up to 100%, don't let it go all the way down to zero for the battery health and everything. And he was basically making the argument that their batteries were doing better than they thought and that you could go all the way up to 100%. And I feel like somewhere in there they said that it is padded a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
That's my take on it.
Tim, could you stop sharing your screen there, and I'll actually show you some answers to this.
And maybe I'll interject a little bit. Maybe some of that padding is something they unlocked with the rear-wheel drive, or maybe that was a software tweak just in the motors alone. But
that could be. Yeah. So okay, Joe, point for you because that is in fact correct. This was back, this has been a while ago, and the same guy, whoever's been doing this, has found the same thing. This was December 14, 2016, the first article I remember. It was to read the headline, Tesla's hacked battery management system exposes the real usable capacity of its battery packs. Mm. And there was a guy that basically found this guy, okay, Jason Hughes here, who was able to go, I think it's just into development mode or something, which if you have the password and you know how to get in there, it's you know, not really that complicated. But the idea was, and this guy was obviously upset or just trolling them, and this is back before Tesla even had the Tesla handle, so this is how old this is. But they were saying that the full battery packs were up to, you know, 75 kilowatt hours when they were only allowing 60 kilowatt hours to be used. So this thread has original, and he has a listing of all of them here. As you can see, they're software limited. There's the originals. There's the P90Ds, blah, 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 blah. So an example would be a 90D would have 85.8 kilowatt hours of total capacity, but the Tesla software limits you at 81.8 kilowatt hours. Mm. So like when I've driven my Model 3 down to zero and I got 75 kilowatt hours exactly, everyone basically assumed that, you know, there's probably 78 kilowatt hours that are actually in there. And it's exactly mm-hmm. to do what you're saying. It's to not – so even if you charge to 100%, it doesn't get to that you know, full 100% charge. And similarly, if you go to zero, you, as I've done twice when I've tested it, have 12 more miles before the car actually stops driving. And it still appears to be on. Like, I remember being stopped. The car would not engage, but I could put it in autopilot, you know? So there's some weird stuff there. So clearly Tesla is being very having an abundance of caution, you might say, mm-hmm. Around the battery packs. And they do have more, or, you know, based on what we've seen here, do have more energy in there than is reported. Now, the second part of this, so I guess the answer is, yes, they do that already. The other thing that I've heard from folks that are much smarter about this than I is that the bigger deal is not taking it to 100%, but taking it down to 0%. Now, because that constitutes what they call a cycle. And cycles mm-hmm. tend to have the strongest, in the data I've seen, the strongest correlation to battery degradation, meaning they can't hold as much charge. So that is kind of the bigger deal from what I understand. And Elon actually responded to my friend Kim from like Tesla on this on Twitter. They did a whole video on it. And the battery management software is like really kind of strange in how it shows the number of miles. And that isn't always reflective of how much energy is in the battery. So there's kind of like it's a very moving target. And with Tesla, we've seen that where like if I were to pull up the 100% state charge of, say, the exact same model Tesla, it'd be all over the board of what Tesla, the battery management system, is reporting. So, yeah, they do that. They keep you from actually going to 100%, I assume, and you know probably correctly for that exact reason. Stay away from 0% if unless you're a YouTuber like me trying to make get some views or something. But that seems to work out well. Or, you know, the data we've seen for Tesla batteries shows that they're going to last a super long time as a result.
Remember when there was that hurricane in Florida and they actually gave the Teslas a little bit of extra, they like unlocked the software or whatever, and so that they could drive a little bit further to get away from the storm?
Wasn't that mostly people that had the 60 kilowatt hour that was like software limited that was actually 75 kilowatt hour battery packed and they unlock those particular vehicles, or was it all others getting kind of boost?
That was it. So even in fact, I think right now the Tesla Model 3, the standard range plus, isn't the software limited at 240 miles? Or no? Which one is it? One of the current Model 3 options is software limited at the mileage.
So, it'd probably be when they had like the standard and with like the 220, it was probably a software limited version of the standard plus.
Correct.
Yeah, that's what it was.
That's right. Yeah. So, which is no longer available on the site or wasn't really. Anyways, whatever. Yeah. So, they've done this in the past where it's software limited, and that's all they did there. So, they didn't actually unlock this capacity. They unlocked the already software, like additionally limited, which was already in place for, you know, monetary reasons or whatever.
Mm hmm. Sweet.
Yeah, it's an interesting thing, and you know, this is something that I am totally baffled as to why Nissan, even today with their latest version of the Leaf, do not have a battery management system. They do not have a thermal management system over their battery packs, and this is exactly where electric vehicles got a bad rap to begin with, because the old Leafs were having failures, batteries just flat out dying and just not working in cold environments or extremely hot ones. And it's because there was no temperature controlling in them. And so it's really one of those things where you're just like, what are you guys doing? Now, I understand the Nissan Leaf is a far cheaper vehicle than a Tesla, but you're kind of hurting the whole thing by creating that stigma, right? Mm-hmm. So not all batteries in electric cars are created equal, like not by a long shot.
Mm-hmm.
But Tesla clearly, you know, has crushed it at this. And so if I were any other automaker, I would copy that exact same model or, you know, maybe build on that or whatever.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Dang. I like that. Good to know.
So there you go. Why don't they just...
Thanks for the question.
They do.
Yeah. Oh,
why
man.
Do they just?
Why do they just? Do they just?
They do this, exactly. Oh, man. Well,
is that
guys,
a good place to wrap up?
I think it is, because I have been working like 14-hour days trying to get this stupid video done. Guys.
Oh, but your audience is going to love it, Tim.
It'll all be worth it someday.
Will it, though? What if this thing totally flops? What if I make a 50-minute freaking infographic and animation 3D rendered thing and no one watches it?
You heard it here first, everyone. You've got to save Tim. Get the word out. Make this a hit.
Listen to
it's
how a gamble.
Desperate he is.
It is a gamble.
Just
though,
let the boy make a video.
Because I could split this up into three videos easily.
Hey, boy.
Okay.
I could easily
triple
do that.
The ad revenue.
That's the you could, but I'm gambling, and I want for me
are
it's
you
more
doing
important.
Mid-roll ads on that as well.
Yeah, I'll do some mid-roll ads, but
I mean for that long, I would say like I always feel bad because I used to have that auto check to where if the video was over 10 minutes, it would auto mid-roll.
Right.
And my videos would be like 10 minutes and 40 seconds or something.
And people
I'm like,
mad.
Oh, that's lame. Like I get if it's a 30-minute video or something, but come on,
yeah.
man.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I love when I watch like a 12-minute video and there's like 3 mid-rolls. I'm like, seriously.
Wait, you don't pay for premium?
No.
Joe.
It's like $10 a month and this is your job.
I love premium.
I'm just going to guilt you into doing it eventually.
All my money goes into my car now, so.
Oh. Because it's so expensive to maintain.
Anyway, it's a big risk, don't you think?
Dude, like, totally.
For me, I'm hoping that it's worth the educational value to have it all as one video, because if I split it up, people are going to skip parts. They're not going to understand all of the context. Mm. They just simply won't. So I'm taking the risk saying
you're going to get 1,000 comments that are, and you're just like, yeah, go watch the whole video.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're like, dude, it's an hour long. I don't have time for that.
Too bad. Then don't click on it.
So how long are you looking at?
50. It's just around 50 right now.
Okay. All right.
It's long.
Well, like I was saying, I think before we jumped on here, little inside baseball for the listeners, but like there's a lot of people who are killing it doing videos that size. And there's a huge value to that. And I think that's where YouTube kind of wants to go, is that sort of long form entertainment to compete with your Hulus and your Netflixes and Amazon Primes and all that. So
we'll see.
It might blow up. You never know. I applaud you for taking that shot. Honestly.
We'll see.
So that's what Tim is working on, Joe. What do you?
Of course. To? Hey, hopefully. By the way, next week when we record, hopefully that's not the case anymore. If I have to tell you that I'm still working on the Raptor video next week,
you're not allowed back until.
Yeah, yeah.
There we go. I like
this
that.
This is your last podcast until you finish that video. Just tired of hearing about it.
Yeah, Joe. What are you working on?
I'm going back to quantum computers and kind of looking. I did a video last year that did pretty well. People seem to like it. And there's actually been a lot that's happened since then. So I'm trying to kind of do an update on it.
Cool.
It's a field that is changing constantly. Like I'm always hearing new stuff about quantum computers. So
that's the thing that confuses. I mean, I've heard 1,000 times the explanations, and I've, you know, lovingly watch Justin Trudeau explain it 10 million times. But the thing that is hard to grasp, it's almost like a 5G thing where it's not what you think it is. Like it is and it isn't. Right? You think 5G, oh, I got 4G in my phone and here's 5G. It's just like faster. Yeah, but it's also so much more different and crazy than that. You know, quantum computers is like, oh, it's just like a faster computer, right? Like, yeah. But
yeah,
also different?
Totally different.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, one of the things I talk about in the video is that it will probably never completely replace classical computers, but it might sort of integrate with it in sort of a hybrid fashion. Because it has its own strengths, and classical computers has its own strengths, so like combining those together might be the way forward.
It seems like it'll be integrated in the same way, like a CPU is really good at certain things, and a GPU is better at other things, and then you could just add a quantum computer now to do a certain other set of operations, and together,
Yeah, and so, Ben, you were talking earlier, again, before we started recording, about these like services online where you can like use a GPU... like in the cloud, basically, or use cloud computing kind of thing. There is one, maybe two different quantum computers that you can access online that way and use to do like calculations.
But wait. So you're saying a quantum computer exists?
Oh yeah, there's a bunch.
Yeah.
I thought as soon as that happens, encryption is dead.
I mean, once it's in the hands of everybody, maybe, I don't know, but...
So the idea behind encryption is that, like, just real short aside, like, encryption works today by making things hard to guess what the actual, like, key to decrypt it is. But with a quantum computer, you could essentially try every single possible combination instantly and have the answer.
At the same time.
So, basically, the entire... security foundation of which our world is built would crumble immediately.
Like, well, maybe they're not to that point yet. I don't know, but like the D-Wave Systems has their highest level one right now. It's called the 2000Q, I believe. They're working on a 5000, but yeah, I believe that one you can actually access online and
crazy.
You can get like a minute per month to run calculations on it, which doesn't sound like much, but like you said, you can run.
Yeah.
Like hundreds of thousands at a time. And
So it's like, let me go render that video. Beep. Done.
Like, I was just going to say, like, honestly, it's taken me like 4 or 5 hours to do some of these renders for these 3D graphics and stuff with motion blur. And you were talking about cloud, like GPU. Can I literally do that with Adobe?
Yeah.
Send me a link, please.
Let's go. let's go deep. Let's go into. So one of my favorite podcasts is called Marketplace. And they have a section called Marketplace Tech, and they have a section called Related Links. So there's a thing called Shadow PC. It's called Shadow.Tech. They are not a sponsor, but what's up if you guys are listening? And so the idea is, I think actually, so maybe this is even a little bit of a topic worth talking about. I believe that in the future, we will have essentially dumb terminals, which is back in the days of mainframe computers where you just had a monitor and a keyboard and mouse. If you go to like an AutoZone or something like that, you see this like black screen with just keyboard stuff that they use. That's kind of a similar fashion or similar type system. So you essentially your machine is just accessing another machine, which is living in the cloud, the mainframe, as it used to be called. Now it's just like on a server somewhere. And that machine has basically infinite power. And you are just like have a monitor, a connection to it. So this Shadow company makes this thing for gaming where they say, what is it? Yeah, you can do like 60 hertz at 4K remotely. Like it's not running on your machine locally. It's running on that machine. Or 144 hertz full HD, which would I think be 1080p is what they typically count it as. And so you pay, you know, per month or whatever to access this, and you have this massively crazy powerful computer in the cloud that you can then, you know, do things on. This is designed for gaming, but you could use it, as you imagine, gaming and video rendering are pretty similar. The other one that I used to use was Paperspace. And Paperspace is good, but I had issues logging in a few days, and I'm like trying to get the video rendered and out to YouTube, and I can't log into my computer. So I'm like, you know, going to their headquarters, like shouting at people. But they do have a thing where you can do the machine learning side. Okay, yeah, they even have a visual effects thing here where you can like have this high performance workstation, and then you have what are called render nodes. So imagine you're going to render Lord of the Rings. And it can spin up like 50 new nodes, like 50 new computers, and distribute the rendering across all of those and then bring it back to you. So it can render like a whole lot quicker than you could even if you had just like a monster local machine. And again, you access it via an app that you install. You can even do it like Samsung has a thing called Samsung DAX where you can dock your phone and it becomes a PC. And then you could like remote into this thing. So you could literally just like walk around with those things and you have this like monster machine just from your phone.
Jeez. So, well, so I'm realizing that even for what I'm doing, I should probably just be plugging in my laptop too and letting it render stuff out with Adobe. I think I can do that as long as they're on the same network.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah, I'm not sure how it all works, but I mean, this thing, yeah, NVIDIA Quadro, blah blah blah, 50 GPU kind of a system. Like these things are pretty dope. I mean, Paperspace, the only thing I would recommend from my experience was get the monthly pricing. That way your machine never turns off and you always have access. Because when I was having issues accessing it, basically they were saying, "Oh, well, your machine is fine, but the login service is down or it's too busy and you can't log in right now." And I'm like, well, it basically is down then if I can't log into it, right? It's like, oh, your computer's fine. You just can't, you know, see it. Okay. So anyways, but if you had a monthly plan, and that's where things got a bit more expensive. It was like $300 a month. But anyways, so Tim, maybe that's a tip for you if you want to check this out. But I think there's another lesson there of like the future of computing, I think, will happen largely in these things where you have a very low-powered local system and an insanely high-powered remote system.
Yeah, that's really cool. I'm looking into it now as we speak.
There you go.
That's so cool. Dang. Well, Ben, what are you working
on? That sounds like a ludicrous future to me.
Tricaris. So
what are you working on, Ben?
I have so many videos, guys. I just hit a creative spurt. I don't know if it goes for you, but it's like these waves. Like the tide comes in, the tide goes out. Like I have these spurts where I'm just like, yes, and I want to make 30 videos. And then I have times where I'm like, I don't want to do anything. So I just did that video yesterday, or published it yesterday. Doing well. Shamath actually retweeted it, so I'm like, woo!
Nice.
If you don't know who Shamath is, he's one of the owners of the Golden State Warriors. VC, former Facebook exec. He actually hired my buddy, and we have a kind of a connection there. But anyways, so that feels good. That video is doing well. My next few videos, tell me what you guys think, and people can leave a comment. I am selling my Model S, and I'm going to post that on my website for sale, because why not? And so I'm doing that video, but I'm doing some stuff to my Model X as well, and I need to like get those things done first before I sell it. So I have a video about like, hey, I'm going to sell my Model S. Also, I'm going to do a review of this thing where you can plug two outlets into one to double the power and charge your car faster if you're on the road. And also, I'm thinking about doing a little thing where I set my cars up and I talk about which one's my favorite, like picking my favorite child.
Oh, we're all going to feel sad for the other one.
Hey, speaking of guy with so many Teslas, it should be reiterated. We still have comments of people being like, "Why do you guys hate Ben so much?"
Have we had more of those?
Now you know why.
Yes, like someone tweeted at me directly, like, "Hey, you guys really need to lay off Ben. Like, it's really annoying how much you guys hate Ben." Like, what are you talking about? I don't get it. I do not get it. I guess we can't at all tease anybody.
No, don't listen to that. You know, I heard a great analogy from my friend Pat Flynn, who has this amazing podcast. I know, Joe, you've listened to it. But so it was about hateful comments and just people being angry online and stuff. And the analogy that he got from somebody, I forget where, was called a bucket of crabs. Have you guys heard about this?
I think so.
So if you have a bucket of crabs, like maybe a large bucket, and one of the crabs starts to crawl out, inevitably, the other crabs will grab onto him, or that crab, him, her, whatever they, and try to pull it back down or try to climb over it.
Mm-hmm.
And this is the analogy where if you have success online and attention and you're saying something different or unique or you have a message, you will get a lot of hate because those are the people saying, no, stay in the bucket. You can't do that. You can't be different. You can't say those things. Come back in here. Or trying to climb over you and use you as a springboard to, you know, climb out themselves. So it's one of those things. Like when I hear any of these negative messages, to me, it's always a positive sign of like, yes, I'm doing something that is worth causing someone to react in that way. Because they're the crab in the bucket and they don't want anyone else, you know, they don't like that other person climbing out. I just thought that was an interesting analogy.
The other interpretation of the crab in a bucket thing that I had heard, I think I heard it from Charles Barkley, of all people, but he was talking about how, like, when you're
kind of...
Love me
some Charles Barkley.
Well, he was talking about, like, when you're kind of on your way up in whatever field you're doing in your life, whatever, you know, he said you kind of have to make sure you get to the top first before you start helping people, because if you're like still kind of, he uses the crab in a bucket thing, like if you reach the top and you're just kind of hanging on and these other people are trying to, you know, climb up with you and you start trying to pull them up too, then you'll just get pulled down. So he was like, you have to kind of make sure you get to that point, take care of yourself first. It's kind of like put your own mask on first before you put it on your kid on the airplane kind of thing. But you got to make sure you get where you need to be first before you start like helping other people. But you still should help other people because that's the right thing to do. But anyway.
That's terrible.
We heard that somewhere along the way. That's terrible.
That was terrible. I love Mr. Charles Barkley.
Shaquille O'Neal. Kobe Bryant.
I think we did it, guys.
We did
episode, what episode is this?
Is it 35?
35. Guys, we're going to hit 100 before you even know it.
What? Guys, we're like over halfway to a full year.
Yeah. What? You're right. Wow, that is amazing, actually. Doesn't feel like we've been doing it that long. Dang.
All right. Well, we hope you guys are enjoying the show.
Yeah. Share it with a friend. You know, do that kind of stuff.
We can still got like how many more weeks of bashing Ben before we get to a year?
How much longer? The countdown. I'll put it in the background here. I'll like put a little count timer up on the wall.
1 year since bashing Ben.
Cool.
All right,
well, guys. We'll see you
in our
ludicrous
Dracarys.